Down the Line of Kitchen talks about food. Down the Line of Kitchen talks recipe. Down the Line of Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We gather here around our kitchen table every Tuesday at the studios of KHOI, and we talk about food farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we're glad you're with us today. Well, this is midsummer. The garden is just going absolutely productively bonkers, which is really nice. In spite of the storm, storms have been hitting through Iowa. Some places, way too much rain. We had a bit of a storm last night, and one went through this morning. So we're used to getting
the drought
wet.
Is over.
Yeah, I think so. Today,
for now.
Well, today we're going to talk about tomatoes and more stuff in the garden. It seems there's lots of things to talk about, and tomatoes are a broad and colorful subject. But first, I got to taste something we talked about on a past Donna Lana Kitchen show a long time, well, I don't know, maybe a couple years ago. There's a man named Alan Burgo, who is a forager.
A Midwestern forager.
So what he forages is, it's handy because you really actually could find some of the stuff that he's working with. And he talked about doing something, a black walnut liqueur, and it's called Nocino. And I had a friend actually make some of this stuff, so I can actually report what it tasted like. It sounded pretty exotic. What did you think?
I thought it was delicious. It's made out of black walnuts, which we have plenty. Black walnuts everywhere. Even when you don't want them, you got
even
them,
when
right?
you don't want black walnuts, they fall all over.
And I was always fascinated with this recipe because when you pick a black walnut up off the ground and it's got that green husk on it, the smell that comes out of it is something that I love, and it transports me back to my childhood immediately.
And this green smell does not taste like walnuts, but this smell is the early spring. In June you harvest these things?
To make Nocino, yeah. You want the unripe walnuts. So, maybe you should climb the tree to get them or something. I don't know, because you want them before the nutshell is formed inside, because what you're doing is you're taking those little green things, and you know, when you eat black walnuts, you get rid of all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And go for the nut on the inside of the inside. But in this case, you want the whole thing. So it's got to be young enough that you can basically slice right through it with a knife, as if it were like a very firm apple or something. Mm-hmm. It has to be that soft, and you want to pick ones that are unblemished. So if they fall on the ground, they are often have critters in them and stuff. So to make the Nocino, you cut each black walnut in half, and if it has any, you know, if it's not like white all the way through, or has any kind of little black things in the inside, don't put that in your Nocino. So you take these. So the original recipe talked about June 21st, that's a particular saint's day in the Catholic Church, because this is a very old recipe. Alan Burgo writes in his description, I don't know why, what it had to do with the mystical significance of the saint's day, da 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 da. But later he found out that actually most places that is the ideal time, because they're big enough to be bothered with, but they're young enough that you can slice the knife through them. Mm-hmm. So June 21st is when you're supposed to gather the nuts. And then you put them in alcohol or Everclear. The one we tasted was actually made with Grey Goose, which is really good vodka.
Oh, yeah.
Brittany's technique, which is the one that we tasted, she actually cut the walnuts up, put them in the vodka, added sugar and some maple syrup, and some cloves. And I think she said a cinnamon stick. Mm-hmm. So different recipes have optional flavorings.
Yeah, now, here's some other optional flavors. Actually, this is from the Alan DeBurgo. You can put in things like a coffee bean or two, mm-hmm. Allspice berries, trillium leaves or sweet woodruff. But we're talking about adding some other flavors to this. But I was absolutely amazed. This came out, you think, okay, here's this green thing you're macerating or letting it age for a while, and it looked like coffee. It was thick and dark.
Well, you know, if you're shelling walnuts, your hands always get black. There's tannins in it, mm-hmm. and that turns everything black. Now, the one that we had, Brittany just put it all in the jar and stored it for 30 days, and then we drank it. And I thought it was really quite delicious. But Alan Burgo's recipe is you don't put the you put the walnuts into the
liquor
for 30 days or uh-huh. so. And then you strain it off?
Strain it off.
And then you add
water.
Then you add sugar
and stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then he insists that you need to age it for 6 months.
Well,
so no telling what that tastes like.
Yeah.
Must be really, you have to be very patient to do that. Ooh. But he says that in 6 months, the tannins in it disappear. And I don't know, with Brittany's, maybe there was enough sugar that it balanced out the bitterness of the tannins. I don't really know, but we should try it again.
But thank you.
It was really,
thank you to friend Brittany for making this.
A very nice little after dinner mm-hmm. sipper drink.
Yes, it was just thick and aromatic and sort of like bitters, not mm-hmm. quite. But
and it went really well with the cake that Lana made.
Well,
okay.
That too. Yeah. That too. But Nocino. You can, Nocino. You can look that up. And it's an old drink.
Well, and we have the black walnuts to make it. I mean, almost, you can hardly walk in a park in Ames without finding black walnut trees. So,
It's very doable. Next spring, think of Nocino again, because yes. now I've tasted it, and it's worth it. Okay, so let's get to tomatoes.
Okay, Lana has the first tomatoes in her, you know, and of course, I consider Lana the queen of tomatoes, although she only grew 15 varieties this year instead of her usual 30. She's slowing down a little bit, but we launched into them on Sunday night. They are beautiful. It's very exciting. It's my favorite time of year. So, Lana, tell us about the varieties. Well, first of all, talk about, because I can never remember this. What is the difference between a determinate tomato and an indeterminate tomato?
Well, this is something you run across in seed catalogs.
If you're growing them yourself, you need to know this.
You need to know this, okay? Indeterminate tomatoes, and this is a horticulture, a scientific thing. Now, this is not a hard and fast thing because tomatoes can be slightly in between these two, but indeterminate tomato plants grow long and tall and keep putting on long, tall runners and keep putting on blossoms and setting fruit throughout the season. Determinate tomatoes are something that has been bred for, and you can find DET or determinate tomatoes and as a descriptor of tomatoes. Those have been bred to stay relatively short and bushy. Think of smaller caged tomatoes, and generally the fruit, tomatoes are a fruit, generally they come sort of all at one time, which is nice if you're like canning or putting things up, or you'd have less space. Determinate, small, and like determined to say small. Indeterminate keeps on going. If you have a healthy plant, keeps on going until the first frost.
So the indeterminate ones are the ones, if you want to have fresh tomatoes for several months, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that's what you want.
And also, tomatoes ripen and mature at different levels. So that when you're looking at your seed catalogs, you're looking at your seed packets, look for the maturity date. Some of them are as early, not really early ones now, 55 days maybe, or some take 90 days.
And okay, now does that count counting those days, is that from when the plant first sprouts to when it actually produces a ripe fruit?
I think that's what they are counting. Now, of course, it depends on how you handle these things, when you plant it, how big your little plant is when you put it out. Mm-hmm. I tend to count from when I put my little plants out because I get kind of shocks them then. But yeah. So
your little plants are already like 3 inches high, six inches high, mm-hmm. maybe. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But,
all right.
But give or take, there's early season, there's mid season, there's late season. There you go.
Yeah. Well, we got out this book called The Heirloom Tomato from Garden to Table. It's by a woman named Amy Goldman. She is a New Yorker who used to be, I think, the chairman of the board at Seed Savers or something. But she does produce these very beautiful coffee table kind of books. And this one is about tomatoes. And you got to say, you look at those pictures, you want to grow tomatoes.
You have to remember that tomatoes are a visual feast. They are wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
And don't think that tomatoes are just red.
No, she has in the table of contents, it says portraits. So she breaks them into categories. Currant and cherry tomatoes, that means the really little ones and the slightly bigger ones. Then the ribbed ones, which are like the Costoludos, which are so pretty. Globe, beefsteak, pear and plum, oxheart, and then she talks about the color groups. So, you know, there's green tomatoes, there's purple tomatoes, there's, of course, the famous yellow low-acid tomatoes. And then she goes into specific varieties with descriptions. And some of them, she obviously was growing just because they were pretty, because under the description, she does list flavor, texture, soluble solids, flesh colors. Some of the, under flavor, I went through looking under flavor, of course. Some of them go excellent high acid and high sugar on everyone's list of flavors. Others say things like, you know, not so flavorful. And I'm thinking, well, who'd want to grow that then,
there's a variety there's thousands of varieties, but there's a variety that is actually looks like a bell pepper and it's hollow on the inside and the flavor is
what does she call those?
Sort of, well, not so good, but it's pretty. So guess what? That is suggested as a basket for serving
other
things in. A little stuffer, so you can stuff those tomatoes.
Right, she's got a whole chapter on the bell pepper ones. And
bell pepper tomato. They look like bell peppers, but they're tomatoes.
Yeah, and the under flavor on those, she goes, fair to good, you know.
Fair.
They're called they have the brown flesh one, the yellow stuffer, the Burgess stuffing, Liberty Bell, Schmig Stew.
The names are fantastic.
Wild names. And then the ox hearts. The pictures on the ox hearts are just beautiful. These are the ones that have the little point on the bottom.
Yeah.
And they're kind of, so the names are like dinner plate, orange strawberry, sterling old Norway, Hungarian heart, Japanese art, ox heart. And then she goes into the color groups. So the pictures are just, you're drooling over them.
It's like I said, tomatoes are not just red, and it's nice to eat with your eyes sometimes. For many years, I grew tomatoes to sell as seedlings and also for farmers market, too. So those choices for seeds for those were, okay, what's going to sell, what's going to travel well? Because not all tomatoes deal with a ride in the back of a pickup all that well. You know?
Oh, the plants or the tomatoes?
The tomatoes, yeah. You know, thinking of, what are people going to buy? Are they going to buy one that's kind of funny looking? Well, I always delighted in taking a basket of funny looking, as in funny shapes and sizes and colors. And they're great for talking about, but somehow people didn't buy a lot of the exotic ones when I got them to farmers market. People do like to try, if you're a tomato grower, of course, finding a tomato plant that you want to shepherd along and sounds a little exotic, that's fun. So for many years, I grew all kinds of tomatoes, including a lot of people liked the determinant, the little more well-behaved as far as size is concerned. People have smaller gardens, or they're growing in containers on patios. And so I used to grow quite a few different varieties of those. But since I'm growing for myself now, I'm kind of sliding into retirement here. I didn't grow a lot of those handy determinant kinds. So this year I had the opportunity to plant out a lot of my own home-saved seeds and old seed packets that they're fine, 2-3 years old, and try those out. So I had a lot of little extras. So maybe he got one or two plants, but it's nice to have some of those little extras. Try some new things. Yeah, but were some of my favorites, too. I grew more brandywines this year than I have in the past, because that's something. Well, other growers have brandywine, so I grew a yellow brandywine that did really well for me last year, and then a pink and a red. Now the difference between a pink and a red. Okay, you're splitting hairs a little bit, but yes, you can tell the difference. Mm-hmm. And the leaf shape is different sometimes when you go into brandywine. The older varieties are
What about the flavor differences?
Yeah. As far as brandywines are concerned, I think they're all wonderful. They're high acid and wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I always grow them because that's a perfect thing to just slice open and put on.
Oh, they're so pretty, usually.
Yeah. So those different kinds of brandywines are good. And then there's a lot of other tomatoes that I'm not a scientist. I grew for a while. This year I grew something, an old seed packet, tried it out. Mennonite. It looked just like a brandywine. Very pinkish, very big. So that was variety that I wondered. Now, those are my big slices.
Now, the brandywines, are they streaked kind of in the color?
No, brandywines aren't. There's other kinds that are big and streaked. And those are nice, too. Although, I think they're quite, as far as I'm concerned, they're quite delicate. They get ripe. You kind of carry them carefully to the kitchen. I grew for many years one called Old German Stripe. That's another one. Mm-hmm. This year I'm trying a new variety, Ruby Gold. Gold with red stripes. Mm. It's a later season, 90-day, indeterminate, and that looks promising. It looks promising. Things are great. And I love my not red tomatoes, too. Smaller red tomatoes, I ran across a variety called Red Field Beauty from Seed Savers Exchange, and that's been a good one for me because you don't always want a big tomato. You want a smaller, and it's kind of pinkish and nice. And then there's the not red tomatoes, my gold brandywines, Ruby Gold, the Nebraska Wedding, which is a lovely thing.
What color is that?
That's a big orange.
Oh.
And it's an old heirloom, actually from Nebraska. And it's just one of those big, it's a rewarding thing to grow. Cherokee Purple. I like growing Cherokee Purple. I always grow one or two Aunt Ruby's German Green. Yes, that's a green tomato, and that's a big, big, big tomato, too. Green Zebra. A peach tomato. And I got seeds from my friend Ben, so it's just called Ben's Peach. And Jean Flamme, which is a small, a 3-inch around, orange, yellow on the outside and pink on the inside. Jean Flamme, a French heirloom, yellow flame. That's a dandy. And then there's cherries, too, and paste. And tomatoes are just fun.
Well, one time somebody from Seed Savers told me that in Iowa, the more successful tomatoes are the ones that are from northern, like not necessarily Italian, because those are more warm weather tomatoes. He said to look for varieties that come from Germany and Russia and north, mm-hmm, that they mm-hmm. would do better in this climate.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like a lot of your choices are right along those lines.
Well, I try a lot of things, and if they don't work, I don't grow them next year. But that does leave me with, like I said, I had lots of leftover seeds this year, which was a pleasure to plant out, visit old seeds, visit old plants, and try some new ones, too. I saved some, a little red cherry plant, saving seeds I've been doing for years. You let the tomato... you squish out the tomato seeds and the pulp and let it actually ferment for a while on your kitchen counter. After 3-4 days, it looks really bad, Donna, really bad. It's all moldy and awful.
Squeeze them and spread them around the plate?
Then you rinse them in not hot but warm water. Get mm-hmm. rid, the fermentation takes red, gets rid of the...
the tomato plant off of it. Yeah,
it gets rid of the slimy stuff, mm-hmm. the membranes on the inside, and just leaves the seeds. And then, I don't use hot water, just use tepid water. And then I dump those out on a plate, do that through a sieve, dump that out on a plate, and let it air dry. And there we have seeds ready for next year. And be sure to label things. Sometimes I get a little carry away.
Mystery seeds.
They all look the same when you dump them all out. You know, it's good. It's good. And I've been growing saving and growing a tiny current size tomato for years, and people do like that
one.
Little red ones. I got them, I think, about 20 years ago from a grower here in town, and he called them Texas Tinies. And I've called them Texas Tinies too, but I figure I have been growing them in Iowa and saving the seeds here in Iowa for a long time. I'm kind of just calling them tiny, or maybe they're Iowa tinies.
Iowa tinies.
Iowa tinies, right? So, and yeah, I like my tiny tomato. As a matter of fact, we have a neighbor, Steve, who goes up and spends time at a cabin in northern Minnesota, and evidently he's turned on his... all the people in his cabin community up there. He always takes a couple dozen plants up there with him each year, and they kind of have a tomato race up there and have a good time with the Texas Tinies or the Iowa Tinies now. So tomatoes are lovely.
Well, I find when tomato season starts, I have this progression. The first tomatoes, I just slice them up, little salt, pepper, and olive oil, no vinegar, just... those are eating, just plain eating. And then you start in, because you don't want the first tomatoes, you're not ready to cook them yet.
Oh,
they're just
good heavens.
So good. They, you know, you want to just, because I am a very difficult shopper. I do not eat supermarket tomatoes out of season.
I don't know.
No, if I need tomatoes for cooking, I just buy the canned ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because a fresh tomato is... it's so special. So first, you spend a week or so just eating fresh tomatoes at every meal. And then you start thinking, well, you know, I could put them in a Greek salad. I could put them in a watermelon salad. Gazpacho comes along fairly quickly. In fact, I have a really good gazpacho recipe. You just put them in the blender. Some tomatoes, some watermelon. Some people put a little bit of red pepper in it, and then a piece of bread, some olive oil, salt, pepper, sherry vinegar. You blend that all up, and then you can add some like chopped cucumbers or some chopped peppers in it when you serve mm-hmm. it. Oh, and basil.
But yeah.
But it's so fast, it's so delicious, and you drink it right away.
I wasn't a gazpacho fan, really, until I tasted that recipe. I think it's pretty darn good.
Yeah, good. I am a gazpacho fan, I have
good,
to say.
Good.
And there's there's that kind of gazpacho, then there's the one without the watermelon, then there are creamy gazpachos, too.
Ah.
So, all kinds of gazpachos, and I don't even get into cooking till later.
Good idea. It hits just about the time when you don't want to turn on the stove anyway.
Right.
So enjoy those tomatoes. We'll come back and talk more about tomatoes and good things from the garden. This is KHOI, and you're listening to Donna Lena Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Thank you. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lena Kitchen. There's a tune by the Barn Owl Band called Little Rabbit. So here's a shout out to all those things that are sharing our gardens with us this summer. Oh, rabbits. Oh, my goodness, our little hungry little devils, I must say.
They don't eat tomatoes. They're too high off the ground, right?
They taste everything.
Oh.
Okay. I have a groundhog that eats tomatoes. Yeah, and my
lucky groundhog,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and my deer, there's deer that like to just walk along the, if they get in or there's a tomato available, they will not necessarily eat the tomatoes. They like to nip off the top of the plant because I suppose it's, you know, nice and green and
soft,
tasty and tall. And something else that's eating tomatoes this time of year is the tomato hornworm. So if you come across a very large green worm on your tomatoes, they won't bite. Just pick it off and feed it to your chickens or toss it gently to the side. But they
far away from the tomatoes.
They do eat tomato leaves
rapidly.
They grow like crazy. And here's to the tomato hornworms and rabbits. Oh, yes. Oh, we're going to talk about, I've got a little note about tomatoes. When you have this time of year, when the tomatoes are fresh from the garden and you don't want to eat them all at once, take them home. Do not put brand new fresh tomatoes in the refrigerator.
Oh, I never put in the refrigerator.
As soon as you put tomato, and this is maybe why tomatoes don't taste so good after
at the supermarket, right? Because they've all been refrigerated.
Anytime a tomato, a ripe tomato, gets below 50 degrees or 55, the sugars totally change in this thing. Yes, it can probably last for a while, but then it will taste like
cardboard.
A store-bought cardboard tomato, or what I like to refer to as a TLO, a tomato-like object. So, okay. But a lot of ways to enjoy those tomatoes.
Yeah, and if you're not growing them, there's always farmers markets to go to. And actually, some of the corn stands around town also have tomatoes they have grown. There are tomatoes aplenty coming. It's just the beginning of the season, and we will, you know, then there will be melons too, which is another, you know, we're well into the sweet corn, then the tomatoes. Now, we're not to this stage yet, but Lana and I, we don't can anymore. No more canned tomatoes. It's just too easy to buy quite decent canned tomatoes, you know. And Lana spilled a bunch of hot boiling canning liquid on her arm.
That was with pickles, though.
That was pickles. Okay, still hot boiling liquids in large quantities. Okay.
bad.
It is not good. Not good. So we found something that we actually like better, which we call our tomato candy.
Yeah.
So, and you can go through a lot of tomatoes. You just take big sheet pans and put a little olive oil on the bottom. You cut the tomatoes, depending on the size. If they're, you know, smaller to medium, you can cut them just in half. Lay them flat side up, skin side down.
Skin side down.
And then they do well with a little more olive oil on them, not too much though. Mm-hmm. And I like to season them before I roast them. So I do salt, pepper, and then I rub on some either crushed marjoram or basil or oregano or some combination. And then you explain how you do it in the oven. Lana's very methodical. I just put the oven on and keep turning it down. But
the idea, you're trying to get rid of the excess
moisture, yeah,
which leaves you with this wonderful. Now, if they're not dehydrated.
No, they're not dry.
You end up with tomato
gummy.
Glop.
Yeah, glop. Yeah.
Oh, it's
yeah.
so good. You put it in freezer bags. It's so good. It's a base for a lot of things. Now, I start out in a hot oven. I do two trays at a time. Two bags at a time.
And your sheets need to have sides on them.
Oh, yes.
None of this flat cookie sheet stuff. It'll be a mess.
No. They're officially called baking pans. Or
I call them sheet pans.
Pans with a side.
It's not a high side. It's like a half an inch.
Because the
something.
Liquid is the important part,
right,
actually.
Right, that's what you're
reducing.
So you
start out, and every half hour, every half hour.
Wait, what temperature do you start
at? I start at 425.
Oh.
Just put it in a hot oven, and then for a half hour, then turn it down. Then you turn it, then go back down to 400. And then, check out the recipe on our, every half hour you turn it down 50 degrees until you get down to 250. And you'll find that the tomatoes brown a little bit, they shrivel up a little bit, they release their juices a little bit. When you get to the very end, and do check the recipe, which is on the Donna Lana Kitchen recipe page at www.khoifm.org, the recipe is there under oven candied tomatoes. When you get down to the very end, turn off the oven, crack open the oven door for a while, and just let it cool in the oven, and more moisture will leave, and then you end up with good stuff.
The only thing you really have to watch for is you need somewhat uniform size in your tomatoes. Like if your pan has some big thick tomatoes and some not so thick tomatoes, the not so thick tomatoes will cook and burn before the fatter ones get nice and gooey.
Mm-hmm. But burn, unless the whole thing burns. Those slightly charred edges are tasty, so don't...
Well, be careful. Depends on how extremely charred they are. You know?
This is a relative term.
I speak from experience. You can screw this up, okay? Otherwise, it's... And I don't watch the temperature nearly as well as Lana does. Sometimes I just keep going till they reach kind of gooey consistency that I want. Depends on your oven. Depends on the tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Some tomatoes, you know, of course, are juicier than others, mm-hmm. and the juicy ones take longer to cook. But the thing is, what you end up with is so good. You know, you can store that in the refrigerator, ready to go on pasta or pizza or anything, even just as a little side with a nice little steak or something like that. They will stay in the fridge for a couple of weeks, right?
Or they freeze really
well. They freeze really well. You just put them in little baggies, and then you've got delicious tomato glop all year long.
Tomato glop is a big hit at our house. Now, Donna puts a lot of different seasonings on her tomatoes. I just salt and pepper them because... And then I know that all is on.
All right, you can always add the seasoning later.
Add later. Anyway, but it's a handy, handy thing. So many good things.
I have been known to eat extraordinary amounts of them right out of the oven. They're just so good.
They are.
You know, if you start with a good in-season tomato, you cannot go wrong.
Fantastic. Another thing from the Donna Lana Kitchen recipe page on at khoifm.org, and we have a web page there. There's a recipe page. This time of year, there's a recipe for bread and butter zucchini pickles.
Oh, Lana made it the other day. It was that was the best you've done. It was really good.
Don't ever say people don't like zucchini because this is good. Make pickles out of them. And
did you have some cucumbers in it too?
Yes. Because
so it was onions, cucumbers. Was there garlic?
No. Onions, cucumbers, zucchini, cut up small. Don't use the big ones.
The little ones, and slice them thin. And she did different colors. So some yellow, some green. Very pretty.
And I put in an early a sweet pepper that I had, although I do like to add hot peppers too. You can add. And then making this fresh cucumber.
Wait, did you say that you started by slicing them? You put salt on them?
Yes. Now the recipe on the webpage, you can can these, but also for just making this to eat.
Right, these
the night
were
before,
fresh. Yeah.
I'd like them to sit in the refrigerator at least overnight.
Hours?
Yeah. So the day before, I cut up all my vegetables and let them toss them with some salt. That breaks down the hard cell walls of the vegetables.
Yeah, and it pulls some of the moisture out of them too.
And then I do a quick rinse and let that
strain it off. Yeah,
after
let it
about
dry.
An hour.
Yeah,
and then I heat up on the stove, and the it's on our recipe website under bread and butter zucchini pickles, but you can add anything else. It's a little water, apple cider vinegar, sugar, turmeric, salt and pepper, dry mustard, and...
Is it mustard seeds or mustard ground?
Mustard seed works good because it's prettier. You don't have the mustard floating around in there. And anything else. Sometimes I add a shake of allspice in there, but and they don't have to, but anything else. But
Did you put fresh dill in it too? You did.
Oh, yes. You? I had fresh dill. See, another one of those things. You have it this time of year.
So yeah, the dill is really nice right now.
Then that sits, cover that. Cover it, put it in the refrigerator.
Wait. You boil the vinegar and spices.
Mm-hmm. Let that cool a little bit.
Oh, you cool it a little bit before you pour it over the vegetables.
Now, for canning, I would just put it right into the jars and hot, and then put it in the hot water bath. For this fresher refrigerator pickle, maybe you don't want to sog up the vegetables.
No, and what I liked about the pickle is, you know, when you can pickles, they are sour pickles. But this fresh pickle is not quite as vinegary. It's still got a little snap left in the vegetable. It was just delightful.
And this recipe will, you can sit it as a refrigerator pickle in a jar in the refrigerator. It'll last a month, unless, of course, you eat it
Well,
first.
It'll progressively become more pickled. But you could probably also do it with cucumbers, onions, or any mix thereof.
Peppers.
What about beans?
I've done it with beans. You do have to blanch the beans a tiny, tiny bit.
Some.
Otherwise, the beans just kind of want to stay hard beans.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway. Okay. But summer.
You do pickled okra, too. Is it the same?
It's the same idea. Salt it.
Do you have to blanch the okra?
Nope, I don't. Because
you pick them small and tender.
Right. I've done okra, and then I pickle those. So it's kind of the same bread and butter zucchini pickle recipe that's on our website. But you can, with that pickling juice, that's kind of my base. And don't be afraid to try new things. Add other spices, add hot peppers, add whatever.
But well, and Lana, one year, Lana and I did pickled tomatoes.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a big adventure. It's an Eastern European thing, and I actually, we'll see. Maybe I'll even do it again. I kind of enjoyed it.
I like the taste of them. I don't care for pickled tomatoes because they end up kind of mushy, and I don't know. I don't want to eat them cold and mushy. I'd rather have tomato sauce. But that's just me. Pickled tomatoes taste just fine.
Well, and with the pickled tomato recipe, you actually put them in a jar and ferment them for a while. Mm-hmm, I kept my eye, I think about a month or something.
Yeah, they had a tang, zing to them.
Yeah.
It's amazing what you can do with tomatoes. Tomatoes. We're just kind of getting started, Donna.
Oh, yeah. It's just the beginning. Here we go.
Good.
Get yourself some tomatoes and start eating. Get those. They're full of vitamin C and lycopene, and they're really healthy, and they're really delicious. So they're not even fattening, for goodness sake. Can you imagine? What a package.
You heard it here first. Good. Donna, you have a little bit of a news item, I believe.
There's a new problem that's been identified in the food system. So we've done some shows about PFAS. Mike, how are we supposed to? PFAS. Okay, those are the forever chemicals. These are bad. In fact, they're so bad that the Environmental Protection Agency has really redefine the limits of what is allowed in food system and drinking water. And, you know, there are many sources of these things. They are in flame retardants. They are used a lot in packaging for takeaway food because they kept the grease, you know, it made the packaging convenient. Well, we're going to have to, as a civilization, we're going to have to rethink that one, right?
They're starting to get rid of those PFACs, I heard.
Yeah, so we're working on that. The latest research has found that they are also these chemicals, and there's a few of them. It's a family of chemicals. They are widely added to U.S. pesticides.
And heaven knows we don't think we've gotten rid of the pesticides.
No, yet. No. And so here in Iowa, you know, we are in pesticide alley, so to speak. So this is a new concern. I mean, it's not like it's just in the flame retardants or, you know, they are now discovering that, holy moly, we have put this stuff into something that we are spraying everywhere, right?
On our land, into our water, and yeah, we are kind of in the middle
right,
of this.
Right, so
stuff.
This is kind of a new, it's a news item. I've seen it twice this week already. I read about it finally in Civil Eats by a writer that's widely respected because something happened. Can you imagine this? That the EPA tested for this, right? And they said, oh no, there's nothing here to see, folks.
Oh, they did. Okay.
Right. So there was a watchdog group who went, I don't think so. And they used the Freedom of Information Act and got access to the test results. And they started pointing out, well, what about this? And what about that? And you didn't mention this. And so the EPA has been kind of caught with their pants down on this one. And there will be ongoing stories about this. But it's another, you know, bad news bears kind of story. So here we go. More Iowa stuff.
So stay tuned. Yeah, there probably will be.
Yeah, that and the other story that I keep seeing in the news every day is, of course, the bird flu thing. The news this week was in Colorado. It's been about cows, but now we're back to birds. Farm workers in Colorado who were tasked with, you know, eliminating the infected chicken flocks also came down. So with the bird flu, at this point, everybody's going, it's okay, it's very mild. But the concern is now that bird flu is definitely transmitted to human beings, the possibilities, which we all know from being educated during COVID, that these viruses mutate, and they change, and sometimes they become not so terrible, but sometimes they get really worse. And so now that humans are a host, as well as cows, and apparently other animals are now a host to this virus, which we know from bird flu spreads rapidly, and it's been really a big bummer for a number of years, right? They're watching it carefully. In Colorado, they have, I think they're starting to test the poultry workers to make sure they're finding it. And, you know, there's lots of, oh, this could get really bad, but are we really doing anything about it? No, it's okay. We're testing. No. So, you know, it's been in the news a lot and nobody, of course, knows where it's going. So, you know, it's kind of everybody's got their fingers crossed and saying their Hail Marys and blah, blah. So those are the cheerful things that have been in the news about our food system this week.
Oh, dear. Thank you, Donna.
You are so welcome. I am sorry.
You are listening to KHOI. You can find out more at www.khoifm.org. You can go to the Donnellana Kitchen recipe page and the archives and find out more. Welcome back. This is the Donnellana Kitchen. We're talking about gardens today and, oh, the glut of tomatoes, the ever anticipated glut of tomatoes, and they are here. They are back. Another thing that's coming along quite nicely is green beans. Green beans. I brought in some things to hold up to the microphone today because like I said, I kind of dug into my stash of seeds, and I had a couple of handfuls of different kinds of varieties. Now, I have a kind of a manageable, believe it or not, a manageable size patch of bush beans, and they, bush, they stay small and knee-high. And I had planted Maxibel, a variety called Slenderella, and I like a yellow bush bean called Pencil Pod. And I have been picking on that patch for a long time, a big flush about 3 weeks ago, and then they kind of went away, and then we got some good rains, and they are back. And so I've got a lot of green beans, and what's nice is that they come for a while, and then I pick them, and then I forget about them, and they come back. So I like those. Those are good. But then, pole beans. Pole beans used to be the older variety of pole beans that grew on a trellis, long, long, tall beans that need some support. They used to be kind of, as they was referred to as, stringy or hard to, they needed to be snapped and take the long string taken out. But the new varieties are quite lovely. For years I've been growing Ideal Market pole beans, thanks to Steve and Ethy for turning me on to those. Those are good. And this year I tried a new variety called Climbing French Pole Bean, which looks like it's going to be pretty darn good, too. That's a later thing. They just started. It's kind of a flatter bean. And actually, all beans, if you want to, you can leave them grow and mature on the plant, and they will make, most of them will make very nice potted beans, the kind that you put in soup pots. And, yeah, you can do that, too, but I tend to eat them
Oh,
green.
You let them go to dry bean stage.
You can. Yeah, and yeah. I've saved bean seeds over the years and planted them again just to see what happens. It's so nice. It's so nice to get to know your bean. And so I have some beans in here this year. Yeah, I enjoy them a lot. And although I don't eat, it's not like tomatoes that I can eat tons and tons of, I do put up beans by steaming them in a hot boiling water for a while and freezing them. Blanch beans in a hot boiling water, drain them, cool them under cool running water, put them in freezer bags, and label them and put them in the freezer. They will be handy long about January. I will enjoy them the second time around. Yes, I will. Well, beans. Donna. Guess what? The state fair is coming around again.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
And state fair, Iowa State Fair, makes a big deal out of its food. Things on a stick. I don't know. Did state fairs invent things on a stick? I suppose.
I suppose because it's portable. The handheld varieties, yeah, you know.
And so every year they put out a list of new foods at the Iowa State Fair.
Are these all on a stick?
Oh, they can't be.
Oh, no, some of them are bowls.
Some of them are ice cream. Well, I don't know. But maybe. No, they're not on a stick. Not all of them, but many of them are. It says there are 84 new foods for fairgoers to try this year. How could you try them all? But we're just going to, looking at this list, I mentioned earlier, it's as if someone took one of those magnetic poetry things that you stick on refrigerators and just had food terms, and you stuck these different terms together, and you tried to make a recipe out of it.
Yeah, like deep-fried bubble gum.
Really, truly, folks, that is an offering this year, mm-hmm. And I am tempted just to see how the heck you're supposed to chew that or swallow that.
I don't know. And right after that is deep fried hot Cheetos pretzels. Okay, that's deep fried hot Cheetos pretzels. Talk about a word amalgam, a word salad, right?
Word salad, but see, the mind just kind of goes, oh my goodness, now what would that taste like after all? There's wonderful things like here's a BLT on a stick, beer belly fries. There's a Barbie-era funnel cake. I bet that has something.
I bet it's pink.
It's pink. I don't know. I stay away from sweet pink food. I don't know. The brunchy burger. butter beer ice cream. Now, Donna?
Butter beer ice cream?
Being from Wisconsin, I think that sounds like a delicious repast, doesn't it? Butter beer ice cream. They have calamari, probably calamari on a stick.
That's okay, not... we don't grow calamari in Iowa. Hello.
Okay, all right. Chicken mac chicken flauta. A lobster
chicken what?
Roll. Chicken flauta. Chicken flauta.
Oh, okay.
Cookies and cream, ice cream, nachos.
Well, they also have the Not Your Daddy's Burger and the Big Daddy Burger.
Burgers, burgers.
Right. Some distinctions there, can't even imagine. Okay, now this one does sound good. The 2-foot Connecticut style lobster roll.
Two foot
lobster roll.
Oh my goodness.
Well, you can share it with somebody, I would guess. I don't know. The Ragin' Raspberry Ravioli.
Ooh, we're responding to the names of these things.
Right, we know nothing about the products. We haven't seen them. No shame for
raspberry,
the people.
Raspberry
ravioli. Who knows?
Okay. Okay.
The shoot tequila funnel cake.
Beautiful. This sounds good. Creme brulee stuffed French toast.
See? That does sound good. Okay, that you might even find at a restaurant. Okay.
Okay.
Ice cream nachos.
Okay. Yeah. Again, they're putting those poetry magnets together.
Exactly.
There.
Exactly. Okay. A disco stick. No idea what that would even be.
Oh, for goodness' sake!
Something called a tornado. Up in smoke snacks.
A pork Bloody Mary buffet.
Pork Bloody Mary buffet.
Okay.
Do you drink it?
Well, I guess we're going to have to go to the state fair. Candy bacon noche. I didn't realize you pronounced that noche. I thought that it's a pasta. I thought it was gnocchis.
Gnocchi.
See?
Gnocchi.
It's a gnocchi?
Yeah. G-N-O-C-C-I. Gnocchi.
Starts with a G, which totally throws you off.
Yeah, right. Gnocchi.
So we're talking about a little dumpling-y thing,
right? Yeah, that's a little dough thing.
Which I still think should be pronounced gnocchi, but candied bacon. Gnocchi. There we go.
Candied bacon. Gnocchi.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Walleye fish tacos. That sounds doable.
Corn in a cup.
Corn in a cup? Corn in a cup?
I wouldn't hurry off to the Iowa State
Fair.
The
corn in a cup, yeah.
Corn in a cup. Oh, but anyway, the Iowa State Fair.
It's coming up. It is a freakish food fest.
Oh, goodness. Well, I wish them all a good bunch of weather.
Yeah, and no indigestion.
It would be nice to try some of this stuff, but I think I could probably get by two of them, and then I would be full. And I like to walk around and see everything. So, we've been talking about tomatoes and gardens and summer things.
Summer, here we are.
It's summer. So, Donna, tell folks about our podcast.
Okay. This radio show is also in podcast format, in case you're modern and don't have a dial on your radio and just listen on the internet. So wherever you listen to podcasts, you can put in Donna Lana, that's one word, Donnalonna, kitchen, separate word, and there you will find us.
That's good. So thanks for being with us today. It's summer. Visit a farmer's market. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We had music by the Barn Owl Band today. You heard Little Rabbit, nice little banjo mandolin tune. And we'll go out with some French-Canadian reels, because why not? That's a good way to go out. Support community radio. Support KHOI. My name is Lana Noctigo.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We've had excellent engineering, as usual, by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.